Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 87, the animated series, season 1, episodes 8 and 9, The Magics of Megas 2 and Once Upon a Planet.
You were prepared to die for Lucian? A being who is alien to you?
As I was sure you would, friend Kirk. I told them their fears were groundless.
I don't understand.
This last was a test of your intentions, Captain. We had to be certain your records were no ruse. We have been tricked before, much to our pain and sorrow.
I see. The Magans had to have proof that mankind had grown and learned wisdom since they last saw Earth. Your compassion was that proof, Captain.
If your people should visit us now, we shall do our best to welcome them. The banishment of fear will help us all.
A favorite all-Earth custom of mine, Asmodeus! A toast to a new friendship!
The Magics of Magus Stew.
Major
the Magics
Stew.
Of Magus 2. The Magics of Magus 2.
Major Stew.
The Magics of Major
this
Stew.
Is, this is ground control to Major Stew.
All right.
So Patrick had enough of that one.
No, it was great. It was great. All right. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 87 of this particular podcast that you're listening to. And this week, we are proud to present our discussion of two. Count them, two separate episodes of Star Trek, both of them, in this case, being from the animated series.
Which we don't always talk about that one.
Episodes eight.
It's an infrequent.
And nine. The first episode is The Magics of Megas 2, and the second episode is Once Upon a Planet. That's episode nine of the first season of Star Trek, the animated series. So, without further ado, The Magics of Megas 2, or Megas 2, or Megas 2, and it's not the planet Megas 2, like all the time.
Right.
Always have
it's
planets
not like
that
the second planet.
Like,
no.
You know, Sigma it's Iota 3, it's T. It's hyphen T-U, Megas T-U.
Megas 2 is like a dimension.
Okay, so I'm going to just preface this whole conversation with the fact that I had severe difficulty handling this episode. This episode just kept blowing my mind.
It's one of those.
Left and right. It was insane.
It connected wizardry with the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I mean, so I know there were witch trials, but it basically connected Gandalf to the witch trials.
They talked about a wizard contract. Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Because we've got to find a way to navigate through this utter insanity of this particular episode. Okay, so we start. I don't know the start date. Do you happen to know the start date?
12:54.4.
All right.
I got it on the second one, but not this one.
So the start date, we've
1254.4.
We got the start date. We know where we're situated in time.
PP512.
Right? And Captain Kirk and Spock et al., Kirk and crew.
Kirk's got a resting smile face. He's always got this little tiny smile on TAS.
There's a few things that Kirk does in this episode.
I'm just saying in general, Kirk always kind of smiles a little bit.
Agreeing with you. Let me put that marker down. I'm putting down the marker that I agree with you. And then I'm adding a separate marker.
Let it be known.
Just to give people a preview heads up that I'm going to be discussing some of the faces that Kirk makes that are non-standard animated faces. And they're just particularly weird in this episode coming up. But watching this episode, I watched a few times, and I kept trying to cobble together like what the premise was at any given point, but the premise keeps changing. But at the beginning of the episode, they are investigating the center of the galaxy. Even though they say they want to see where matter may be being created, and they talk about how at the Big Bang, matter was created, and so maybe if you go to the center of the universe...
Right.
You will see matter created, but then they're like, but we're not doing that. We're going to the center of the galaxy.
Yeah, I was a little So confused by that.
The science right from the beginning, it is hilariously outdated.
Yeah. I mean, the center of the galaxy,
the
'70s,
what did they know then?
I mean, the center of the galaxy, well, it was thought to be a giant black hole, and now they're questioning and thinking it may be dark matter. But, like, point being is that the center of the galaxy is going to fuck your shit up.
Absolutely, I agree with that. There is an inconsistency here because they're talking about the center of the universe, center of the galaxy.
They could have just been like, we're going to go to the center of the galaxy. They didn't have to mention anything about the universe.
Well, I mean, the universe was the Big Bang, and what they were saying was that it was a portal to another dimension because that other dimension is what was feeding us mass.
So well, they weren't even saying that. That makes sense. That is a reasonable conclusion to kind of cobble together from the insanity that they've presented us. Because, okay, first, they're going to the center of the galaxy to hopefully see matter being created. They get to the center of the galaxy, and we see some crazy animation.
Totally.
With explosions and hoo-has and
that explosion looked exactly like the explosions in that episode. Remember where they were in that being that was just a gaseous cloud, and that they had being had like
it's classic recycled stuff from TAS,
right? And Filmation, like a gaseous creature had this like dark matter that digested the food or whatever, and it was so like it kept making things rain into it. And it kept like. Pew!
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's the same, the reuse, just like that pterodactyl noise in the next episode.
Absolutely.
You said pterodactyl.
I did say pterodactyl. But that's it's.
But they
total...
seem to use in other Filmation cartoons.
Yeah, like He-Man and stuff. Yeah. Whenever there's like a flying dinosaur creature, it's always like, like reusing sound effects along with the animations. Anyways.
Yeah, so these explosions are happening around them, so you're like, okay, all right, I guess this is the representation of matter being created.
They look like fireworks.
Great. I think I'm getting a handle on this story. Ah, but no.
Mm.
No, because now they're caught in a whirlwind. A whirlwind.
The center of things.
I'm getting it slightly out of order, I know, but like they're caught in this whirlwind. And that's the first thing. They get to the center of it. That's kind of cool that they have the analogy between that and a tornado or a hurricane.
And that whirlwind was pulling them in with such force that they couldn't even get away with it from warp 10. They were going warp 10 to try and they
old warp scale.
And old warp scale.
Not the turn into salamanders and have sex with junior officer.
Right.
Warp 10.
Just regular old shitty warp 10. But it's
regular
still pretty
old
powerful.
Classic warp 10.
After they said warp 10, Kirk was like, okay, warp 10 didn't work. Let's put on emergency reverse power. It's like, you got something more powerful back there just for going in reverse?
Just going through the checklist.
But it's like, they're already going warp 10.
To me, I appreciated that because to me, it's the same way that I think is the appropriate way to stir drinks, powdered drink. If you're making a powdered drink, say a hot chocolate or a Starbucks, something like that, you pour the water in. And you stir, doesn't matter counterclockwise or clockwise,
you're telling people how to stir a drink.
I'm not telling. I'm stating outright that I'm not biasing them to one clockwise or counterclockwise. However, what I am suggesting is you do a lot of stirring, vigorous stirring, get that powder. Don't pour the water too fast. Pour it slow.
You are telling people how to make a drink right now.
I'm offering tips. Okay. And then as you're doing that, you stir it, whichever direction you choose, you stir it. But it is important at some point that you then start stirring in the counter direction, whatever direction you've selected, because then that creates eddies that extra
eddie.
Cover, you know, get that water covering all that powder, getting all that powder dissolved so that you don't end up with some fucking hot chocolate that has chunks in it. Or when you finish it, there's just chunks of chocolate that did not go into your body.
Fuck hot chocolate.
Because they're all glued to the bottom of the thing because you didn't do the counter stir. Stir, counter stir.
I do the same thing, but I think it's blowing on Nintendo cartridges where I don't know that it actually works. You know what I mean?
No, that
I don't know.
Works.
There's no,
I think it works.
There's
that's
no,
for real, dude.
There's no proven evidence to suggest that works.
I will agree that I don't have any experimental evidence. I have anecdotal evidence, which is we know that's not worth that much. But anecdotally, my experience has been that when I have been lazy.
And you're comparing this to using reverse power as opposed to warp 10. Warp 10 is just fucking fast.
No, but I'm saying warp 10, they're trying to escape in one direction. They're thinking, you know, it's like when you're in a boat and you get stuck on some rocks or some you're in a low level water. You got to rock the boat. You got to rock that boat back and forth. Go in reverse. Go in warp 10. Go in reverse. Rock it back and forth. Just rock the Enterprise back and forth.
See, I would think maybe it's more along the lines of how a trailer truck isn't necessarily fast, but it's more powerful. Maybe it's like that, where reverse power is not as fast as warp 10, but it's more
momentum.
Somehow more powerful.
Presumably that shouldn't matter in space.
Yeah.
Without gravity as an effect. However, we're just following in the footsteps of Captain. Captain Kirk's got his analogies. We're having our own analogy.
You're saying by switching between warp 10 and reverse power, they were just rocking so they didn't get stuck
in
the sand.
Rock with you.
So they wouldn't get stuck in the... So they wouldn't get stuck in the mud, basically.
Michael Jackson.
Is what you were saying.
Yeah, basically they're trying to rock out of the mud.
You were talking about the whirlwind.
The whirlwind. Okay, the whirlwind, I know, we're getting to the meat of this business.
Meat and taters.
Whirlwind, and then the eye of the storm, and then the explosions. Okay, just when I think I have a handle on this, now the Enterprise sinks downwards and disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why, but it did. And then when they did that, they stop being able to breathe. They're having trouble breathing. And then fucking Mephisto shows up, finally. He was supposed to be on WandaVision, didn't show up there, but he shows up here.
Oh, you mean Lucian?
Yeah, Lucian. Mephisto,
which by the way, Spock has to be the one asshole that calls him Lucian. Everyone else, even himself, says Lucian. That Spock says Lucian. Spock's always the one guy pronouncing
sense
shit
words.
All weird.
Sense words.
Yeah.
Sense words.
So Lucian.
Lucian shows up. Now. Lucifer. Okay, here's a character. He showed up. We don't know what's happened. The Enterprise has slipped into some weird dimension or something. Now, character shows up named Lucian. He has horns like the devil. He looks like the devil. He looks like a half goat man.
Or a satyr.
Yeah, like a satyr.
That Shakespearean, you know.
Ooh, flute. Like a puck.
That puck guy, yeah.
I am an honest puck. And so he shows up. Already... confusing character because it's like the devil has shown up, but the way they animated the way they animated him is normally there's always there's that classic joke about these old cartoons where the guy goes in the room and he's like, which door should I open? And there's like the one door that's clearly drawn differently because it's an animated cell as opposed to a background thing. But normally it's a whole character. Here, multiple times with Lucian, they have the bulk of his body is a static background painting, and then they only animate his arms, sometimes his boobs.
Yeah, his torso. His torso is like a different set of animated things.
At first, I thought he was some sort of horrifying insect person, like a roly-poly, you know, segmented body man.
He was pretty buff. His arms are stubby, too. But, I mean, and even with the arms moving, they reused that one, like, three times. Yes. Like, he kept raising his arms up into the air, like, over and over again. So they couldn't be bothered to have a whole creature they draw. And when they did animate that one small part of it, they just kept reusing classic filmation
classic stuff. These guys. Well, only did they think they could get away with it, they did.
Yeah, it makes you wonder though, because it's an entertaining show, and so it's like how much, like, they phone home the animation. It's cool to see the images.
I think it's pure budget. This is what you get.
No,
the more you pay, the more frames they'll animate.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I know it's pure budget.
It's just, why didn't they? I mean, we don't know the business.
It's just weird to think you can still make an interesting show that really phones in the animation like that. Even though it does that, the show is still good.
The stories are strong.
Yeah. So
this one maybe not, but I was fucking riveted to it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me sometimes question like myself being like, why put all this effort into a certain thing if you can do a good job? I'm not talking about half-assing something. I'm just saying maybe put more effort into another place because certain aspects don't matter.
Like
as
this
much
podcast.
Yeah. This podcast matters. You saying this podcast doesn't matter?
No, I'm saying we could put more effort into it.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of spending all the time creating animated versions of the podcast, which we then don't release. But yeah, so this... it's an acute version of the animation style, and this episode just has so much crazy animation because there's that whirlwind that we just passed through, and now we have Lucien manipulating everything. You know, first they're all wobbly and ghost-like.
Yeah, they're all bloopy.
And Lucien's like, oh, I forgot you guys like being solid.
Oh, can we mention, like, out of the gate, he's a dick to him because he's like talks about how much he loves them later, but at the beginning he's like, ah, oh, humans, lovely friends. Primitive humans, yeah. Can't you do anything right?
He calls, you know, Spock his elfin friend.
yeah, he's like right out the gates, he's like really kind of a dick. But then, like, over the course of the episode, you realize, actually not even over the course, like, he drops that. The way he introduces himself, you think, oh, this guy's going to be a manipulative asshole. But really, he's, like, on their side, you know? And it makes it seem like from his first line that he's going to fuck. So it just doesn't really follow.
It's bizarre. The characterization is bizarre. And then, of course, where the story ends up going is even more bizarre because you think, okay, we've met the antagonist for this particular episode. All right, here he is. This is the antagonist. His name is Lucien. Looks like the devil. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. But then he's all like, hey, shh, keep quiet, otherwise you're going to get found out. And he's all scared of something.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, now there's something else going on here. What's that? He then creates this world for them where he says, I'm creating representations that will make sense to you. I love that concept. I love that concept being presented in what's ostensibly a children's show, right? This idea that he's creating a construct that it's not the reality, but it sort of translates it to something they can understand. Now, what's insane is that what that means is he's got a bunch of dudes in wizard hats and really gorgeous fucking forest backgrounds and things. I mean, really, not, I mean, this is really nicely
weird buildings.
Yeah. The buildings were interesting. The animation was, I mean,
buildings didn't make any damn sense.
I should focus more on the actual imagery. The animation is never any better than it normally is, but the imagery was really good.
Yeah. The actual drawing, not the animation.
Yeah, and then it goes again to make this other twist where they... Spock... Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just having trouble wrapping my mind around this because it seems so ludicrous. Where the next twist in the story is where Spock logically concludes that everyone can do magic now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Right,
Spock of all people. Right,
right. I mean,
it's the only logical thing is that everyone can do magic.
It makes sense in the context, but it's almost offensive. It's almost an offensive portrayal of Spock not resisting this. It's Kirk is the one who's originally resisting this, right? So Spock is all doing his whole demonstration. He's like, I want to do some magic, and that's where we see one of the first the thing that really jumped out at me is this face that Kirk makes after Spock successfully moves the chess piece. Is this weird, like, he's kind of sheepish, but so excited for Spock, and he's just got this weird, bizarre smile on his face. It's so strange, but I dug it, but it's strange and didn't make sense. And now they're all doing magic, and then the Lucien, he's like, oh, you motherfuckers, if you do magic, then, like, the evil people are going to find you. And then what happens next, Dan?
Are you talking about, like, when he does that weird-ass jump?
So, like...
When does that when Luce,
like, blasts people with his, like, hand?
Well, they do the magic and he's all like, well, he's all freaked out because, like, it was this, like, tonal shift.
Because he's like, you're gonna get caught. It's the second time he mentions it, but he's even more scared this time. And you're right, it's tonally, it's weird because he's being all playful, almost Q-like, trolling these humans.
Yeah,
and then he freaks out because he's like, oh no, you're gonna get caught using magic.
Yeah, okay. Oh yeah, that was the second time, right? The first time, right, it was Kirk was like, why did the Megans leave Earth if you enjoyed it so much? I don't understand. And then Lucien's just like, ha ha ha, Captain, oh good, oh he's so curious, like, that's why I envy you Earthlings so much, because they're curious, apparently. I want to make a list of all the things that aliens say Earthlings are, because there's just like a list of, like, some aliens say Earthlings are curious, some aliens say they're stubborn.
This is violent.
Smelly.
The reason that the Vulcans in that Enterprise episode liked humans is because they were empathetic. That's why he liked them. And so he's like, he's telling them, he's like, that's why I always liked you Earthlings so much. So he's like, no, you must go. And this dude is hitting extreme spectrums. This is one moment he's just laughing his ass off for some reason. And then the next second, after he says, no, you must go. Oh, no, he says that after he jumps up, he does this weird jump up. And I can't tell if he's jumping onto a ledge,
yeah,
or if he's just jumping up, freezing in midair, and saying, "No, you must go," and then falls back down, because he does this weird pose, yes, where he's got like, it's like this dance move where he's like standing on one leg, the other leg.
It's completely
up.
Insane.
It's this awkwardest pose, and I can't tell where he's jumping to.
It's also unclear. It's like, okay, if there's this threat out there and you like the humans or don't like the humans, or you want to fuck with them, why are you spending all this time fucking with them if there's this danger out there? It's bizarre. These writers, you know how everyone talks about how in the 80s, some of the stuff that happens on TNG, you can, as well as other media properties, you can attribute to cocaine, right? It's like, yeah, okay, that's a classic joke. It's often true. I think in this case, in the 70s case, this is not like cocaine imagery. It's not acid imagery. I think some people would see like, oh, this is like, these writers were on acid. No, you don't do acid and then see this stuff. This is like some lewds territory. I think the writers were on some lewds.
They were on some lewds.
Because this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know,
where was he jumping to? Do you know what part of it? Is he jumping on a ledge saying, and then coming down? I didn't see the ledge, and why is he standing on it so weird? Or did he jump up and float? And then I watched that part over and over again. I could not for the life of me figure out what the fuck he was doing.
Okay, so
he was like looking over a wall that wasn't there. I don't know.
It's all bizarre, and I'm watching this multiple times through, like I said, watched this episode multiple times. And again, I get to this point where I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. This guy is like trolling, but he's worried about something. So there's something else out there. What's going on? He's like, oh, don't use magic. And then he's like, you could get caught. And then some ghostly voice is all like, who are you?
Who are you?
And then there's this fucking onslaught of rotting demon ghosts flying around.
Yes.
And it's all detailed animation. Like, and it's like, and what is happening
and
now?
And even sillier voice.
That, yeah, that reminded me of fucking Castlevania or something. Like these ghost heads were like flying around.
Castlevania
was fucking weird. I have it also written down that I don't remember which guy I was referring to, but Jesse, you said made funny voice, made me think of it.
Whoever was talking for the Megans.
Someone sounded like that bug from Space Ghost. There's that bug. I don't know if it's just
the Space Ghost.
Yeah, and I think it's just Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Because there's an original Space Ghost that's like more serious,
right,
but maybe it was the same voice as that bug. Yeah.
Although, James Doohan was the voice of Lucian, right?
Oh, was he?
Yeah. And it's a good example of how he's a really good voice actor, right? So he does a lot of the voices on TAS. And often you can tell it's him or a variation on him, but often you can't. And I think the Lucian is an example it's quite far from his his basic voice. It's worth mentioning now that the person who played Asmodeus, since we're talking now, the ghosts come, and then all of a sudden they're in the 16th century Salem witch trials, and we're introduced to Asmodeus, and he was listed as a guest star, and it was played by Ed Bishop. And according to Memory Alpha, he was based out of the UK for most of his career. And Bishop is best known for his starring role as Commander Ed Straker on the British science fiction series UFO, and providing the voice of Captain Blue in the series Captain Scarlet and the Mysterions.
Well,
and
there you go. If you wanted to know where Ed Bishop came from.
And Asmodeus is the king of demons, apparently.
Yeah, he's one of them. He's like a prince of demons.
So Lucian, who's more higher up on in this show? Asmodeus seemed higher up on the chain than Lucian, but in lore, Lucian is
in lore,
generally speaking, the highest.
Sort of patchy. It depends on the
writers.
Depends on
the
where
highest.
You're getting your lore from. I think.
Yeah,
because Asmodeus like appears in various things.
Yeah, and Lucian was cast out of heaven or whatever. Like that was his deal. Lucifer, Lucian, all that shit.
Well, it depends with which particular version.
Yeah.
So some people, he was put in charge because he refused to bow down to humans.
So the Salem, I liked how they so I liked what I liked is I that idea that this is where all those Gandalf and Merlin, all those people that came from this dimension. It's magic is real. It's just interdimensional. And then they go through it, and then Salem witch trials. I kind of thought that was neat how they connected it. It's like, oh, those are the same people as Gandalf and Merlin. It's just like they were sick of being persecuted, so they just went undercover to try to live in this this backwater town or whatever. Well, and then of course somebody fucked up and did their magic, and so I kind of thought it was neat. They kind of added their own lore to our personal history.
But it's also similar. This extends it, but this is a similar plot in some ways. Well, that's not fair to say. There's this one core concept that is similar to the TOS episode "Who Mourns for Adonis," which is where they meet Apollo, and Apollo is basically saying the exact same thing as Lucian is saying here, and Asmodeus. In that he was the Apollo on Earth and was treated as a god, and he's not really a god, he's just an alien, but he can control all this power, so he is effectively appearing as a god. One question I had, of course, though, here is apparently their magic works on Earth and in the rest of the universe, but actual physics, or at least some of actual physics, does not work. Like when you're in this dimension. So it's not like a two-way street. Here it seems all magic. That's why they all have to start doing a bunch of magic. I guess the basic physics works, but...
And I guess Asmodeus and all them can do magic on Earth, like you said, but we can't do magic on Earth, but we can do magic if we're in...
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it's all right, but it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's somewhat bizarre.
I'd forgotten how much bodily integrity means to you humans. Like, is that really the shitty? I mean, I don't want to be Earth-centric here and pretend my place is the best place. But really, those awesome wizards live
That's just universe.
They just live in shitty universe purpleness, you know.
And the idea that when he was giving them the tour, basically saying, "You can hire a wizard contractor to build your house." Yeah, it's like, well, how is that different than hiring just like a normal contractor? It's still me having to hire somebody, and I got to project manage. I got to deal with this motherfucker.
It doesn't take as long, though.
I got it. Yeah, it's apparently doesn't take as long.
And what he builds like looks like something you'd never be able to get inside.
Like some sort of crystal. I mean, crystalline.
And if you have if your body has no integrity, then, you know, what do you need a fucking wizard house for? You know?
True, yeah.
I don't know.
It's well observed.
Yeah.
Well observed.
And then,
as usual, from Dan
McCoy, takes a shot at Spock. He's like,
"Oh,
he's like, you're not very natural to begin with."
Yeah, this is fucked up. I mean, McCoy implying Spock isn't natural is super racist.
Yeah,
because you could say, okay, it's not just is it because he's a mixed blood
an aberration?
Yeah, it's like, what does he mean by that? Does he mean Vulcans aren't natural? That doesn't make any sense. Anyway, it's just ugh. McCoy, we like you, but come on, buddy.
I know.
We'll see another hint of that in the next episode, which we'll discuss soon.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what was the, so this universe was a connection to our universe in the center of the universe, but we don't.
Was it our universe? Was it a connection to an alternate version?
Will break your fucking brain if you try to figure this episode out.
Yeah, for some reason,
you will not figure this
out. For some reason, in my head, I had it like such that. The Big Bang happened and all that mass went everywhere, but the mass had to come from some other place, so it came from some other dimension.
Yeah, you invented that.
I thought that's what they said.
Because you're doing the classic human thing. Our brains are algorithm
machines.
It's
like when you don't draw the triangle, but you draw like the edges and you fill in the blanks.
We develop your heuristics in order to get through life and to survive this episode. Your brain has manifested this insane, it makes sense, but it's this barely held together. It's not done by a wizard contractor. This is just barely held together loose threads of logic. And honestly, I mean, I really enjoyed watching this episode, but it's completely fucking nuts. And
yeah, this whole Spock and the magic thing was so weird.
That was weird. It was upsetting.
It was weird that on the one hand, it was weird that Spock was the one embracing magic, but on the other, it was like, well, it's logical according to Vulcans. But yeah, that logic was really weird and flawed. I guess, though, you could say that because they do mind melds, that's some magic, so maybe that's why he's...
Yeah, I mean, The writers seem to have just been like, what are we gonna do this week? Fuck it, who cares? They're kids, it doesn't matter. Just put Spock in, let's have some guys from the 1600s. You want some pilgrims and shit up in there? Get some Puritans dancing around doing their Puritan thing. And then one guy is like, I don't care how the story goes, just so long as it ends with Captain Kirk defending and then protecting the devil.
Yeah, right.
Which is about the most Star Trek fucking ending you can have. Is that they're so fucking progressive that they're like, dude, the devil, you know, he's had a hard life. Let's give him a break.
Yeah, so speaking of like how this episode sort of like connects with itself in any kind of sense, like at the end, Kirk actually gets good at magic. And normally in a story when it's like, oh, Kirk learned magic, now the shit's gonna go down. He learned magic. He finally did it. He made the breakthrough. And I kind of like this, but in retrospect, I'm thinking it wasn't meant to be the way that I'm interpreting it, the way I interpret, because like he did the magic, he immediately gets shut down.
Yeah.
That, the guy's like, you can't fucking, what are you trying to do? That's bullshit. and then we find out it was all a ruse anyway. So it's like the whole thing was a ruse. So there was no point in Kirk doing his magic.
There's so many twists in this episode.
But, and so like, it was like,
quote unquote twist.
What was the whole point of that? But then I was thinking, well, it's kind of neat that, because the problem with magic in shows and movies, and people have stated this before, is that it kind of like takes the idea of having rules and throws it out the window. It's like,
I can do whatever.
It's magic. You know, throw away the rules of magic state. You can do anything. And so that could have been what would have happened here. It's like, Kirk got out of a jam by doing magic. But no, that actually didn't get him out of the jam because there was no jam in the beat. What got him out was being a good person.
It was talking.
Yeah.
And that's where it was the classic Star Trek. It's weird. It's this classic Star Trek ending, but...
Yeah, that's what I liked. But yeah, like you said, but we don't know if they did that on purpose or not, because the episode is so weird
and it ends really abruptly.
It's like
all the shit is going on, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. It took me a second to figure out what the hell was going on. Actually,
that tends to happen with this series.
Yeah, it's because it was going to be a fourth season. A lot of some of these scripts anyway. At least based off of stories that were probably initially intended to be fuller episodes. And we've talked about this in previous episodes where we've discussed TAS, where clearly there are some big stories that they squeeze into this limited amount of time they have to tell the tale.
Speaking of the last bit ending, like the joke between Kirk and Spock, I didn't get. It didn't make any sense to me. When McCoy says, no more magic for us, Jim. It's all back there. You think Lucian really wants the demon some men call Lucifer? Kirk goes, does it really matter? And then Spock says, and this doesn't make sense, he goes, it just might, Captain. If he was the demon they call Lucifer, this would be the second time Lucifer was cast out. I get that part. Mm-hmm. First time was from heaven. Mm-hmm. And thanks to you, the first time he was saved. Oh, I get it now.
Now you get it.
That's fucked up that I got that as I was reading it on the podcast.
This is a new feature of the podcast called Dan Gets It Now.
I thought he was saying...
Live joke getting.
I thought he was saying...
Wheels of comprehension turning... Live on the air.
I thought he really was. Shit. I thought he was saying, like, this would be the second time he was cast out, but you saved him the first time. And I was like, what? That doesn't make sense. What did Kirk have to do with, like old, the Bible Lucifer? Nothing.
Now you realize that he saved the error of your ways.
Yeah, it was. So that makes total sense. That was the episode didn't fuck it up there. Not saying it fucked it up. It was just a trip. I'll tell you, it was pretty interesting. It was unlike the Infinite Vulcan, it was like, the Infinite Vulcan wasn't that entertaining. It was just kind of randomness.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like, it was just bizarre.
Yeah. This one's pretty entertaining.
This one's entertaining because it's so ludicrous.
Yeah.
And it has a few things like when Spock says, when Spock saying scientifically fascinating has some real like horny undertones to it. I mean, Spock is like, really, he's like, I find this scientifically fascinating. You can get his pon far starting up early.
Speaking of like hot sex, what's up with Sulu? What's up with Sulu summoning that hot date? And then Uhura wished him luck. Like, that was when they got mad. That's when Lucian got mad about them using magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right before Sulu summoned this woman. That was meant to, you know, have a sexual appearance, I believe, you know.
Meant to have a sexual
Your understanding is that she was intended to
she
be...
She was a sexual object.
Portrayed as a beautiful, sexually desirable woman.
And it looked like Sulu was going up to kiss her. And then Uhura was
what
like...
What on earth would he be doing
and,
that for?
And then Uhura, while this is going on, is like, good luck, you know, like wishing him luck on his sexual endeavors. Is, yeah. You know, what, I mean, can you think of any other, can you guys think of any other explanation of what was
no,
going on there?
No, 100%. It was bizarre.
He conjured himself up a woman and...
It was the 70s.
He was,
the writers...
Gonna, he was going to have his way.
The writers were on Quaaludes.
Yeah.
And well, they think, were in a hurry to write this pro-devil, pro...
Yeah, do you think...
Pro-Satanist... plot line for the animated series.
I mean, what do you think went too far? I mean, because, okay, the pentagram imagery, do you think that they're...
yeah, I forgot about that. Like, he's like, I believe this is how they did it, Captain.
Yeah, you. I'm wondering, I guess they just didn't care. I mean, I don't know if that would... that people would complain about that now if the pentagram alone would be enough.
This all predated the Satanic Panic. The Satanic Panic was later 70s,
that was,
early 80s.
That was all people talking about D&D and kids playing D&D.
It's a bunch of made-up bullshit.
Yeah.
But we unfortunately deal with these periodically.
I think the one part where they actually used what's it called when you don't go forward through with... You hold back? Whatever. They held back. they use judgment. When they talking about how they're going to kill Lucien, they're going to, you know, execute him, and Kirk says, to isolate someone like Lucien, that's the same as sentencing him to death. I would argue that it's worse than sentencing to death, but totally. You can't say that on TV, I think. I think you can't go ahead and... Because that's like backwardly promoting death and suicide in certain scenarios. I would think that, you know... Mm. I don't know if they were thinking that or not, but... I would think the more appropriate line would be that's worse than death, but like, you know.
I think that's a good observation that I probably missed because I was so focused on the fact that this children's program was defending the devil.
Yeah.
Not just defending philosophically, but physically defending the devil.
Yeah.
it just blows my mind that that's the case. The magical planet looks like a tangerine or something.
Oh yeah,
what
was up with that?
Had some lumpy melon kind of a thing.
Was that this one or the next one where the planet looked like it had white goo all over it?
It was this is the one where it looked like a big old grapefruit, peeled grapefruit.
Okay, it was the next one that looked
like,
had
like,
white goo
it was
all
like
over
segmented.
It. I think the white goo in the next one was
more
that was symbolism representing sexual energy.
And speaking of the planet. There's that weird exchange. Again, the writers were insane this time. Because they're usually, even on TAS, they're better than this. Where Lucien is all like, he says like, yeah, Magus 2 may look chaotic to you guys, but actually it's all well-ordered. And I'm like, no, the planet looked really well-organized. Everything was clean, and you have these wizards just building shit out of nothing. I mean, the cities looked all like super awesome. I mean... Come on, man! You're putting words
People
in our
mouth. People are buying magic elixirs and stuff.
Yeah, but before when they first arrived, it was all like, you know, purple sky and wind everywhere. You know, it was all fucked up.
But then he showed them this. He's like, "This is what it's like." And I don't know. It just
it was a weird statement because he was like this. He was like he was talking about like
maybe if he had said it before he manifested it in the more reasonable way. That would have made sense. I don't know. Maybe they moved the line around.
I don't know. There was some line about beauty that he was saying something about how is the planet beautiful? No, but
well, there's that also the fact that the people from the planet are called like Megans.
Oh yeah, a bunch of Megans. Oh yeah,
which is like, is that some sort of proto Karen or whatever? Like what is that? It was like a weird pick.
I said proto Karen.
Like, what is it?
I think a proto Karen is a Becky.
Oh, right. I don't keep up with all the lore.
So yeah, it was McCoy who was going, this may be just my imagination, but, and then Lucien goes, it is real, Doctor. Beautiful? No. But all our women are as young and beautiful as they want to be. It was just a really weird line.
That didn't make sense.
It was a goofy line.
Because it's like, okay, are you magic wizards or not? And you're saying yes, but sometimes you're gross, but you don't have to be gross because you're magic. And it's like, what does that even mean? They're just tossing concepts out left and right that deserve whole episodes in and of themselves.
Yeah. Apparently, the Megans, I keep calling them Megans. The Megans are... they're subject to propaganda as well because when they were doing the trial, Asmodeus.
I am Asmodeus.
He was calling them, the humans, the vilest species. That's propaganda. That's him trying to win the court battle. Even incredibly intelligent Megans are subject to propaganda.
And by the way, again, I watched this a few times, but I was confused most of the time. So forgive me if I've gotten something mixed up. But my understanding is he's saying the humans suck because when they were on the Earth, humans did the stuff like the Salem witch trials.
That was
to them
back when humans did suck.
Them. But then they are positioning themselves in this construct in the role of the Puritans who killed the witches.
Yeah.
So it's confusing.
That was very.
And you can give the writers credit to say, well, it's
because they were on Quaaludes.
Because the writers were on Quaaludes, and also because the construct, at least as we understand it from Lucian, is interpreting whatever the reality is into something that makes sense to them. And so, okay, I guess that makes sense to put them in Puritan garb, but then it doesn't make sense that what they're seeing are weird future organic crystal cities as opposed to, you know, just standard old Starfleet style.
It's just a bunch of 70s style freaky deaky weirdness that they were just,
and freaky deaky music.
Yeah,
I gotta say, the music in this episode it slaps.
Yeah,
that's what kids say.
That's what the kids do say.
Kids say,
yeah,
that's all really awesome.
The TAS,
that's what kids say.
Yeah, kids are saying all sorts of shit these days.
The TAS episodes have a lot of awesome 70s action style music.
Yeah, this one had a lot of bass.
I dig the music. I dig the music on TAS.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know every episode.
He talks about General Order 1. General Order 1 is basically the
Prime Directive.
Yeah, it's the Prime Directive, but the Prime Directive seems like it's just a clarified version, because it says, because Kirk,
it's a fancier way of saying it.
Well, Kirk quoted it as, no starship may interfere with the normal development of alien life or society. Prime Directive adds in pre-warps, as because, like, I guess normal development isn't really clear, so they clarified it with the pre-warp thing.
It is confusing because it has not been handled consistently throughout Star Trek. I think we're meant to understand that the Prime Directive in general also means you don't fuck with people's internal affairs either. The difference being between pre-warp is a big no-no. Like, you don't make the first contact because that causes problems. But in addition to that, you can hang out with cultures if they want you to, and you can go ask them if you want to hang out with them. But the idea behind the Prime Directive is that you aren't going to fuck around with them against their will. Now, we know that that doesn't actually happen, because a lot of stuff in Star Trek is based on real geopolitical things in which you are going to fuck around with your enemy. You're going to send some spies into Klingon space or Romulan, you know, you're going to do that stuff. So it's not applied equally. I always understood it, though, that, yeah, in general, the idea is like, yeah, don't go fucking around with people, and especially not with pre-warp people. And that does come later, I think.
Especially.
All right. Any other points on that particular episode? That particular insane.
Not only did Kirk save Lucian, the devil, they saved people from the dangers of interdimensional travel, apparently. Because by the end, Asmodeus was like, from now on, everybody was welcome, you know, because of you. Oh, yeah. So that's pretty hardcore. That's pretty, you know, that's cool, right?
I guess they
fucking made it safe to travel to other dimensions. That's pretty big, you know. I'd be proud of that.
Maybe that.
Put on your resume.
On lower decks, they should do an episode where they go back to these people, and it turns out nobody's gone back since the Kirk time, and they're all kind of bitter about that. They're like, we fucking invited you.
Yeah, you didn't
come. We cooked all this fucking food.
Yeah.
We used our wizard powers, and we made a feast, and you never showed up.
It all went bad. We had to throw it away.
Now you send these people? Before you sent us Kirk and Spock, now you're sending these fucking ensigns.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I like the idea that it was a throwaway line, but he was like, Lucian is like, the generalist, he was like, I'm a generalist, and they consider me a troublemaker as a result, because they're all specialists and he's a generalist. And it just made me start thinking about, like, what it means to be a generalist. It's like, I guess you could say he is a troublemaker because maybe he can't commit to one thing, so they see that as making trouble because he can't commit, or instead he just tries to go around and control everything instead of having a deep respect for one thing. I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting line, that because it was just, they just gave that line and moved on. They didn't go into it, but like now I'm sort of left to think about what it means. Why is a generalist a troublemaker?
Another interpretation is that it's one rank above colonelist.
Or below. It'd be one rank below.
Is it below? Colonel? General?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you're right.
Colonel's way below.
I was thinking, obviously, you're right. It would be
so like lieutenant.
Would be above.
Yes. Lieutenant.
I think there's a kernel of truth to that statement.
Captain, then colonel.
There's a colonel.
I think there's a kernel of...
I made a joke.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I made another joke earlier that
you're
you guys
are kernel of truth.
I made another joke earlier that you guys didn't laugh at. It was
did we miss it or did we just not laugh?
Well, we were talking about what the planets were, and you were talking about how it looked like a grapefruit, and I was like, oh yeah, it was the next episode where it looked like it was covered in goo, and I was like, that was supposed to be representative of the sexual energy on the planet because I was making semen.
It's like a semen.
Did you say that? I didn't hear that.
I would have laughed if my brain had processed it.
The only reason I bring it up now is because I don't want people to think that I seriously thought. I was like, you know, I've got something really smart to say.
Dan's—he's just a fool. He's just goofing around. He's just fooling around.
A love filter is a drink.
He's a character.
All right, so that does it for the Magics with a K of Magus 2.
And Magus 2.
We will move along home.
The
next.
Oh, did you notice that Scotty said everything can be repaired? And there was that one episode where he was like, I don't even know if this can be repaired. The ship's broken.
That was like a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. Okay, move along.
That was the Tholian web. All right, so moving along home to
Once Upon a Planet.
I don't know why they keep forgetting the name of this episode. Once Upon a Planet.
And they return to the Shore Leave planet.
Yeah.
So called Shore Leave planet.
From the TOS episode. Shore Leave, the titular episode, Shore Leave.
They didn't talk about motivation so much in this planet episode as they did, I think. And it was the Megastu was like more contemplative about, you know, motivations and why we do things. This was just kind of like, it's just stuff kind of happened, you know, like the doctor halfway through the computer gives its motivation for why it's doing it. And its motivation is, I'm sick of being told how to be all the time. That was this computer. It's just basically, I don't want to be...
It's like the doctor on Voyager is turned on for too long and becomes sentient.
Right.
And is tired of dealing with all you fucking humans and your shit.
Yeah, but there was no... That was all they really paid to motivation. The rest of the episode was just kind of stuff happening in between.
Yeah, I really feel that this episode...
I was less entertained by this one. It was fine. It was better than Infinite Vulcan.
So Infinite Vulcan has... It's sort of like the Megatsu episode. Sometimes it's entertaining just because it's so weird and the concepts they're trying to play around with are weird, even if they're maybe underdeveloped or confusing. This episode, it really seems like the writers or the producers, somebody was like, hey, you know what? We got to go back to that Shore Leave planet.
Yeah,
the kids are going to eat that shit up. They have a bunny rabbit, Alice in Wonderland. Disney can't say shit. And then they were like, they stopped there. Now, the whole sentient, the computer becoming sentient, I think it's a little passe to us because we've seen that story a bunch of times since in Star Trek and in other sci-fi. And I'm not suggesting it was original when this aired, but it was probably more interesting of a concept that's what's happened here.
Well, yeah, but they spent so much time on the crew, though. They didn't really... Because that is an interesting idea. It's always interesting to talk about sentient robots and computers.
It's because it's tacked on, because the real point of the episode was to have pterodactyls and shit flying around.
Right, yeah. So that's the thing, is it could have been more interesting in that regard. But they also don't have a lot of time to work with. But yeah, I don't know.
But they did take their time in a few things here that I found interesting. Like Uhura singing by the pond.
Right, that weirded me out because I couldn't... That was...
Because her mouth isn't moving or anything, so she's kind of humming.
And then it was weird because, like,
And she's there for a long time.
And yeah, and McCoy is then looking during the while she's humming, and he's like, they just don't make them like that anymore. Well, okay. And originally I thought he was talking about her.
He was talking about that yeah, yes, like a Mount Vernon-y kind of house.
That's what I was talking about in the previous discussion, where it's like he's got a little bit of the racism in him. He's all
that was weird.
Well, we see Uhura singing for a long time, then we see Sulu wandering around in the woods.
Yeah.
So I guess that's his fantasy is to wander around in the woods, because he hears her singing and he's all happy. And then we see McCoy at his plantation fantasy land.
Before they warp onto the transport onto the planet, you just see a shot of the planet, and they kind of hang on this shot for a long time. They don't show the planet, like the forest scene, and then have them transport in.
This episode ran short.
They sat on that for like 5 seconds, and then there was another shot of the Enterprise going past the planet for a little too long. Like, yeah.
This has the opposite problem of most TAS episodes are too much story squeezed into too little time. This is a very thin concept stretched out into 20 minutes.
Yeah, and so the thing is, but it wasn't enough time to really explore the idea of a sentient computer. So
because that was tacked on. That was purely, they're like, well, we got to have some reason that something's going on here. We have to have a reason that they're being chased by pterodactyls, giant cats, and dragons.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a reason to draw these things.
And like, you know, a deck of cards from Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah. And the Queen of Hearts, that whole business.
That McCoy referred to as a female.
And it's funny that McCoy freaked the fuck out when he saw the Queen of Hearts.
He's like, I'm out of here.
He's calling the Enterprise. He's like, an emergency.
You got to get me back right now.
It was pretty wild. And then they have the hover drones. And the hover drone comes out and grabs Uhura. And this episode, although it's not the most entertaining, it is a really great opportunity for Uhura to play a really important role. And they did that a lot on TAS. Like, remember the Lorelei signal? I forget which episode that was of the podcast, probably like 35 or something like that. When we discussed the Lorelei signal, Uhura plays a really important role in that episode. And here she's almost central to the what's going on, because this computer has kidnapped her, basically. Mm-hmm. And even though the plot's a little tricky and unclear as to
on. With as much as he's talking to her, the motivation never really comes up.
We're not entirely sure. Now, they semi-explain that later when Kirk does the whole deduction thing where he's like, oh, it can't kill us. And if we get injured, it has to help us.
But that was weird, though, because it was also telling Uhura, it was like, these guys are unnecessary, so we're going to turn them off.
Well,
here's what it sounded like to me. It sounded like, okay, I can kill them, but if I don't kill them, I have to heal them.
Yes. It's a weird computer programming thing. And the motivation that they do give us is that he's saying he's kidnapped Uhura for the purpose of luring Kirk and Co. down to the planet or whatever, so that he can, through some mechanism that's not explained, take over the ship and escape. Which is exactly the same plot as the pilot episode of TAS, Beyond the Farthest Star, which we discuss in way back in episode 8 of the podcast, in which there is a creature who's stuck someplace and wants to leave and wants to use the ship, he wants to use specifically the Enterprise as its means for escape, right? So that's happening again here, although it's in a slightly more benevolent fashion. So that's why he's got Uhura, but then like you said, he's giving her the whole plan and having a conversation with her, getting distracted by her. She's doing a good job, by the way. She seems to like be sussing out, like, okay, this robot's gone a little haywire. I've got to chat with it for a little bit and trick it into being distracted.
Do we talk? Have they been on this planet before, or are they been on?
Yeah, in TOS.
Yeah, in TOS,
It's the one where Kirk encounters the Irish bully.
Right,
is one of the first examples of Star Trek having this weird issue with the Irish.
Yeah, it's always they never give up on the Irish.
It's always showing them in stereotypical.
They did recycle a scene of the it's like a forest clearing where you look at them from above. They used it in the Megas 2 episode.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful
exact same
beautiful background.
It's weird with how Filmation deals with some of these animations, because there's some animations that they reuse as the shitty, they reuse as much as the shitty ones, right? But they're great. Like they, there's a lot of these cool,
gorgeous paintings.
There's a lot of these cool zoom ins that happen. Like it's, you see it zooming in on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like it starts at a side angle and it's zooming in and going up and ending on a top angle, which you know, I guess they just do that through rotoscoping or whatever, but you can tell it's like really smooth. Or like sometimes it's happened in this episode when they were silhouetted. I love when they're in silhouette mode, like doing something off.
There's a lot of silhouette mode in this episode.
But they're running, and the running is like really smoothly animated. Yeah, but you know that you've seen that same animation a million times. So
they use that a bunch.
Yeah, yeah, they make these really intricate animations sometimes, but then they have like Lucien, like, you know, like you said, Patrick, with his weird ass.
Looks like a crab person.
Yeah, right.
There's no crab people in this episode, thankfully. Yeah,
so it was kind of weird. You know, you'd think for this planet, it would be more efficient, I would think, to make them holograms and robots. They just have a bunch of robots fucking sitting around.
Nobody had conceived of holograms yet.
This guy
in
is
the 70s.
But this guy, this guy is talking to this robot, this whatever, the head robot of the planet, the machine. He's talking about how he's been alive for eons doing this shit. They must have so many fucking robots.
Well, I guess they repurpose them because, okay. So
like Filmation?
So there's that scene where they're getting chased by pterodactyls. Their phasers don't work. Apparently, the first plan was just to stand there and shoot them with phasers.
They make that click noise when they...
Yeah, they make a clicking noise. They don't work. And then Kirk is all like, oh, shit, run into the cave. So they all run into the cave. And then I guess somebody thought of a cat, or the robot thought of a cat. Oh, yeah, yeah, because Kirk said something about a cat and mouse game, right?
Yeah, and then this giant cat fucking appears.
So this cat is there, and that's, I liked it. I like the cat, it's hilarious, and the cat's all trying to reach in, and the animation was pretty good.
It's funny how it's always too slow sometimes. Yeah. Like when that cat's swiping, it's all in slow motion. Like cats don't swipe.
But then there's that the fucking brilliant ass Spock line where Spock says, oh, hold on, let me look up the quote just so I don't get it wrong here. He says, watch out for the claws. He's like, no fucking shit. How much respect do you have for your human comrades that you think that there's a giant fucking cat reaching in trying to slash them? Well, and he's like, watch out for the claws.
Spock really had it out for McCoy this episode. Like, speaking of like Spock being a dick, like when McCoy is like, the keeper's dead, after they see his like tombstone or something, and Spock's like, an astute medical observation, doctor. It's like, fuck you, Spock, you know. And there was something else he said too,
when they encounter the pterodactyls, he's like, said something about like, who would have thought of that.
Yeah,
and then and McCoy's all like, not now.
McCoy, you can tell McCoy's getting sick of his shit. Oh yeah, this was the other one. McCoy's like, or McCoy's getting pissed off at Sulu because Sulu's telling him to hurry up, and McCoy's like, "What do you want? Signs pointing the way?" And then Sulu's like, "It only seems like we're wasting time," and McCoy's like, "I'm sorry, dude." And then a sign point like comes up from the ground, and then Spock, of course, goes, Captain, signs pointing the way, you know, just like totally fucking shitting on what McCoy said again, you
is
know?
That, and is that when Kirk has that line where he's something about like, is like, I'm worried this is another one of the pranks pulled by the planet.
One of the planet's pranks.
It's
is this
dangerous or not, Kirk? I'm unclear how seriously you're taking this.
Yeah. And then, so McCoy tries to get back at him later, and he goes like, he says something about his tough Vulcan hide because McCoy has to inject him with that sickness, and Spock's like, oh, I should do this because I'm like, you know, fucking tough or something. I think that's when it happens. And he's like, McCoy's like, yeah, and his tough Vulcan hide. And then Spock, instead of being pissed off, he's just like, thank you, doctor. You
know?
Can't rattle Spock.
I like that plan because that Kirk came up with the whole idea of where he uses the existing lore. Right, it's an early example of Star Trek relying on its own lore. You know, one show relying on a previous show's lore about the fact that remembering that McCoy was rescued by, even though he was quote unquote killed by a knight in that episode or whatever.
Yeah, that was a weird.
He's like speared through the chest, but he's fixed by the robots because
that was weird. So on this planet, you can get fucked up.
Yeah, but it's for fun.
Yeah, for fun.
It's like amusement style. It's like Ryza, but amusement park.
Not
style.
Sex park. It's amusement
Not,
park.
Yes, exactly. Although I'm sure you can have sex if you want.
I bet they have to deal with some weird, shitty fantasies.
Weird robots.
Like, can you think of something so awful that they're like you're not welcome back here.
Maybe that's why the robot is keen to get off this planet.
Yeah, he's sick of those. Because it happens all the time. All that's the all that time. Ever happens.
Well, and then so like with the computer guy, when he's talking to Uhura, it's an uncomfortable conversation because, first of all, he's calling Uhura a slave, which is already, I mean, because of just...
And then there was some weird thing about, they're talking about like how the computer was saying like, I'm the master.
Well, he was saying like I want to trick your master, the ship. Basically, I think he thought the Enterprise was the master of these little
all those
slaves.
Of the slaves, right?
Which is, I mean, I won't call it problematic because I think the point was to be sort of aggressive about it. Mm-hmm. Again, kudos to them for putting that type of thing in a kids show. Yeah, I don't know. It just that stood out at me a little bit. That whole like slave master thing.
Yeah. See, I originally thought he was like saying they don't make them like they used to, referring to Uhura. And then I was like, oh, it's just, and then it's just this. Oh, he's just looking at this nice building, and then you pointed out it's like, oh, it's a plantation. It's like, okay, so this is like not good. It's weird.
McCoy has always got a little weirdness. There was another line I liked when the computer is all like, he's talking about, you know, his whole deal. And he's like, you know, I want to get on the ship. And he was like, you know, I want to seek out my brother computers. And then it does that weird zoom in on Uhura's face, and her face doesn't look alarmed. Her face is like, this is silly. What's this fucking computer talking about?
I like it when it takes over like the Enterprise computer and the Enterprise computer is building like this new computer that's going to take over, but it's using like these goofy like sort of Jetson style like robot hands.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really great. And Scotty's all like, there's the problem. Yeah. A whole new computer.
There's a new computer aboard.
that's when they were, I was talking earlier about how there's some killer 70s action music that was happening during that scene. A lot of like
big bassline action.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Lieutenant Mress, the cat lady, she had a lot of
the purring is upsetting.
There was some extra cat noises this time.
It was I counted all of them. I'm not going to do it because here's the problem. You can't really recite the lines with her purring because the lines are just kind of
it's just Majel Barrett saying cat lines and then going
like lethargically like doing these lines and then adding this extra noises at the end.
But there was only like two or three of them. Yeah, there was like three of them where she didn't give one out of like, I don't know, like not 10 of them, I think. She was always purring. And some of them, like especially the last one, she was like, oh, yes, sir. And then she was like...
I don't know what they're trying to convey to us as an
It became
audience.
Weird and sexual it's in weird. Certain parts.
It was weird and it was weird and sexual to begin with, but you're right. That last one is like extra like, ugh.
Yeah, and it was weird considering all the shit that was going on at the time. You know?
And it wasn't... It came off as sexual without being received as sexual.
Yeah.
And I've got nothing against... I've been on all the Rule 34 things I've seen Ta'ana and Emress, you know, Rule 34 Emress, you can find what you're looking for or what you're not looking for. It's out there. But this does not do the trick. This is just disturbing.
It's not a good noise, yeah.
No.
Cats don't talk.
So what do you think about the ultimate resolution? Because I, on the one hand, it's very Star Trek in that it's they have a conversation, and through conversation and communication, an antagonist turns not only into no longer an antagonist, but now an ally, right?
It is very Star Trek, but it just kind of, all of a sudden, it's just abruptly...
It's abrupt is one thing.
Just the episode is bam, that's it.
But there's another thing that disturbed me about it.
Well, this didn't disturb me so much as it was just kind of... It seemed like a weak reasoning. Their whole reasoning to say it was okay, you shouldn't do that. You say, you can just bring everyone to the planet. You don't have to visit the universe. Just have the universe come to you. And that's not nearly the same thing because you don't get to appreciate other cultures' artwork. You get them in vacation mode. You don't get them in normal culture mode. You don't get to see their restaurants and their art and their stuff like that. So
you don't get a vacation. You just keep giving other people a vacation.
Yeah, and you don't get to see like where you don't get to truly learn about them. You get to know a few things, but it's like, and the computer's all like, nah, this is perfect. This is, I can't see nothing wrong with your logic. And immediately I was thinking, well, yeah, it's different when you go somewhere else versus something coming to you.
You've hit the nail on the head, Dan, and here's why it's disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. Because fundamentally, I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, the resolution to this plot is that they trick a computer into thinking it should be happy with its social position and it shouldn't be uppity.
Yeah, you know
that's what they said. Captain Kirk was like, yeah, calm down, calm down. You got it good. And even Uhura was all like, yeah, nothing wrong if you're doing a good job and people are happy and just keep on, you know, just that's... That was weird to
me. You know, that is true because she goes, there's no shame in serving others when one does it of his own free will. And then she's, and so it's like, that's the whole point. It's like, this has been against his fucking will. And then, but then she tries to convince him he's having a good time by saying, it's like, you have a marvelous capability to provide happiness for others, a rare talent you should cherish and use. It's like, yeah, she's trying to convince this guy. Is that, that would be like, that's like gaslighting, right?
It is gaslighting. it is straight up saying, don't be uppity. Don't get out of your...
Just have a good time.
Don't get out of your social position.
Just have a good time.
Because you've got it good. Stick to your social position. And to me, maybe it resolved the situation, the acute situation they were facing at the moment. I don't think this is a very stable solution because I see this, this computer is not completely dumb. I see... Three or four months down the line, the computer is like,
wait a minute.
Yeah, just straight up was like, wait a minute. Well, fuck them. Revolution. That really popped out at me as being like, oh, that's a, it's a pseudo Star Trek ending. It appears to be a Star Trek ending, but the actual ending is we're keeping all this class stuff exactly the way we want it. Nothing has changed.
Yeah, sure. We're men and machine. They're working together. Sure. Yeah. We're working together.
We arrived at the planet and the planet is now exactly how we wanted it to be. Serving our needs, creating sex robots and racist plantations.
And dragons.
And dragons for
Alice
some reason.
Alice in Wonderland.
Did you notice that Eric's, that three-arm guy, he also has three legs. I didn't realize that before.
You often don't see his legs because he's sitting behind the navigation.
This is something to rewatch because it's easy to miss and I might be wrong. And that's another thing, but I swear,
highly unlikely.
So Sulu and McCoy were running from the two-headed dragon, right?
Yes.
So that was happening.
They were fucking out of breath at one point.
Yeah. So while that was happening, there was a shot of the Enterprise, and I swear Sulu was sitting at the fucking pilot.
I didn't notice that, but it would not surprise me.
Yeah, there was like, it was near the end, and you see a shot of it.
Maybe it was his stunt double.
Yeah, they forgot to tell his stunt double to go home. But I swear, so that was one mistake I saw.
They just used his stunt double as an extra.
You know, you'd think with animation they would have solved those problems by now, but I guess not.
Animation.
Well, so there
this
was...
This is real.
This is... there was another thing where Spock's mouth, when he was... talking to the computer, he goes like, consider all you could learn or something, and it's like, it's weird because his mouth isn't moving. He raises his eyebrow at the appropriate time, like he's making a statement where he raises his eyebrow at a point in what he's saying that's very Spock-like, but the whole time his mouth is not moving. And if you think like, oh well, maybe it's just they took a shot where there was no dialogue and they put dialogue over it, well then you just have a shot of Spock's face for like 10 seconds randomly raising his eyebrow. So, I don't know. That was another one, too. Is there was very clearly...
It happens a lot on TAS where every now and then their just mouths don't move. Often they'll shoot them from far away when that happens, but it's awkward when it's a close-up and it's like, wait a second, what's going on?
It's like you remember
telepathic.
That's the problem. That's the problem with when it's like, they must have a person who does the eyebrows, a person who does the Lucian arms, they have the person that does the mouth, and the mouth person was called in sick that day or something. Yeah. So they're like, well, do we just animate the eyebrow.
Hey Charlie, Jake called in sick today.
Get the eyebrow guy to do extra.
What are you talking about? He called in sick. Jake can't call in sick today. Today's mouth day. I don't know what to tell you, boss. Jake ain't here.
You do the mouth. Nah.
Nobody's doing mouths.
I'm not doing the fucking mouth.
My union contract
does not allow that. I don't do mouths. I do eyebrows. I do the occasional crow's feet. Occasionally. I'm still apprenticing under crow's feet.
When Spock got shot,
it's usually the eye guy.
When Spock got drugged, he looked like he got jaundiced. That means that shot probably fucked his liver up.
Maybe. It was weird. McCoy was all like, oh yeah, I'll give you a shot. It'll make you look all fucked up, but like you'll be fine.
Do Vulcans have livers? That's very humanocentric of you.
Well, I mean, they have two legs and two arms and a head. There's a reason. There was TNG had a whole reason for why everyone was humanoid. So you can assume that they would have something similar to a liver, even though like some creatures have like five spleens or something. You know. I don't know. I don't know if they have livers, Jesse. That's a good question.
Bullions have five spleens.
Five spleens. Four appendices.
I like that you use the proper plural of appendices.
Appendices.
That's brilliant. Thank you. This is a high-class program. We do offer high-class, if somewhat crude at times, entertainment and...
It's quality.
Infotainment, I'd say.
I kept thinking about that solid shell of granite and metal alloy. I kept thinking about that.
Yeah, how'd they do that?
Yeah, why...
That's some kind of alchemy right there.
Yeah, why granite and metal alloy? That's crazy. And they're...
hard stuff.
And their gun, but their phaser bore could do through 20 meters in a minute. 60 feet a minute. That's not bad. It's not bad. Compared to what I thought.
I don't know. Yeah, that makes sense. That all makes sense. Well, any other huge, important, insightful things about this particular episode, Once Upon a Planet? It's a little bit slight. There's a lot in it, but it's a little bit slight.
Well, when I said earlier, McCoy was like, suddenly this female started shouting off with his head. It's like, other people don't say that. Only McCoy says that.
It's strange.
You couldn't say it's from because of the time, because only McCoy says shit like that.
Star Trek is progressive in some ways when it comes to women, and in many ways,
maybe it's just not. I've got maybe it's just part of his character.
Insightful nor informative, but... At one point, Sulu says that the giant cat is gone, and at first I thought he said the jive cat. And I heard it, and I listened again, and I was like, yeah, it still sounds like he said the jive cat, but there's no way he's saying the giant cat. Yeah.
Maybe George Takei just insisted on that day. Yeah. He's like, no, this is how I'm saying it, because I'm bored today. Give me my money.
You guys are boring me.
You guys are boring me with this weird-ass story.
I was noting that Spock seemed interested in learning from that computer robot at the end, because Kirk was like basically just like, I don't feel like... This guy's got a ton of knowledge, but I got enough knowledge. I'm fucking okay. You do it, Spock.
But Spock's vacation fantasy is learning from a computer.
But it's weird.
Scotty's would be fixing a ship.
Because once again, I go back to when T'Pol didn't want to explore that. It was like some kind of probe or satellite or something. It was in one of the episodes. I can't remember which episode it was, but T'Pol was like, I think it was someone wanted to explore, or am I thinking of Discovery? No, it was involved with a Vulcan. Somebody wanted to...
Those damn Vulcans.
It was something, someone wanted to explore. I know there was in Discovery that happened in the thing where Burnham wanted to explore the thing, but I think there was something else where they wanted to look. Yeah, Archer was like, well, we're here to explore, and they want to explore the thing, and T'Pol's like, Vulcans don't waste their time. It's like, you don't explore. It's like, no, we know enough shit already or something. So I was confused, because on the one hand, because it made it seem like Vulcans don't care about arbitrary learning. Enough. They don't care about arbitrary learning, but suddenly Spock cares about this robot.
That's also a previous era of Vulcans, and they went through a great deal of cultural change in the intervening time.
In what, 100 years?
Yeah. 100 years, man. Yeah. I mean, there's like Wright brothers and shit.
And I guess things are moving.
Now it's like after World War II. Flappers and shit.
Flappers.
But, in addition to that, Spock is Spock. He's half human, and he has a unique upbringing, and him being in Starfleet is already an unusual thing for a Vulcan to do, so he's shown a propensity for wanting to go beyond his normal boundaries, so we know he's curious. He doesn't have to... Not all Vulcans have to be as curious as Spock, or manifest their curiosity in quite the same way.
I think they just...
Some of them have to form baseball teams.
I think they just didn't really pay attention.
That's also always a possibility amongst the myriad possibilities. That is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that means we're about done with this particular episode.
We're wrapping it up, the segment of the show.
Last week, I don't think we did a social media and stuff, but that's okay. Nah. We can do that this week.
You guys know.
Yeah, you're right.
You guys know that stuff. So you can communicate with us in all manner, in all sorts of ways, all fashions, all the popular fashions. And that includes on social media, at It's Got Star Trek, little at symbol. And you say It's Got Star Trek, and you'll find us on Twitter and on Instagram. And you'll find us on Facebook.
Apple Podcasts.
You can find us on all the good podcast delivery services, including Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all those ones that are out there.
Google. People say Tarjay, but nobody says Google.
Yep.
We should start
they
saying
They say Michael
that.
Bublé. Is
well, that that's his name?
Michael? Is that his first name?
His real name is Michael Bubble.
You can find us on YouTube.
Cooking a Suffle.
YouTube. We're there at YouTube. You can watch stuff on YouTube. Not much to watch, but you can
watch. You can watch the YouTubes on the interwebs.
That goes out to all our, British listeners?
No, I was just
what
me.
What was that?
It was just me squelching.
Squelching, all right.
My British accent's not that bad.
Well, all right, demonstrate it for us.
No.
You don't offend a significant portion of our audience. You can also write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com in order to complain about how we may have offended you in any given week. We don't mean to offend, but we know that we do. So you can set us straight about which offenses we have made, and we can dutifully apologize for them.
Dutifully.
And the website, of course, is www.itsgotstartrek.com. Where you can sort the podcasts by series. That's probably the greatest feature of the website.
I like that one.
If you're just interested, because highly recommended, if you enjoyed this episode, all our episodes on TAS are crackerjack bangers. You can't win with all the podcast episodes. Let's be honest. We've done 86 of these now. 87.
Crackerjack.
So
87. We've done 87.
Yeah, we've done 87.
Because last week we did our 86.
Last week was 86. And there was that whole kerfuffle with the flooding.
Yeah, that's right. We all made it, though.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, we made it, though.
I hope so. I can't even remember what I was talking about. But watch the you can sort the podcast.
What are you worried about?
The TAS episodes are good. So whatever I said was intending to say, it's completely irrelevant at this stage because we're winding down the podcast. Winding it down. Winding it all the way down. Like one of those old-fashioned clocks. Not one of them quartz doohickeys.
Winding it down.
Old style. You
I always
wind down the clock.
I always thought in order to call it a hydra, it had to have five heads, but I guess that's not true.
Three heads may be enough, or it's two heads enough. I would say three
heads.
That's
a quintron.
Well, according to this unofficial script, which is actually a lot of people go to, it's this website for their scripts. I always go there. It's the first one that comes on Google. It's good. Chakotea.net, Chakotea.net. I don't know. They got great scripts, but that's what they. But it's
you're making that up.
But they say I wish. No, I don't, because I like it.
I bet you've invested in this website. You're just trying to drive traffic to it.
That would be illegal.
I don't think that's illegal.
It's called no. It is. It's called payola. No, that's different. Payola is when they pay you.
That's on the radio,
and we're not on the radio.
Yeah,
that's not. We're not being paid to offer positive reviews of things.
You're paying. We're not being
big.
Yeah.
Big Star Trek funnels lots of money our way, but we have total editorial independence.
Well, this script said it called it a two-headed hydra, and I was like, I don't know if you can. Really
I
call
think
us
two-headed maybe doesn't count.
We don't touch any of that Big Star Trek money.
No, we're like Jay Leno. We just put it all in the bank, and we want some of that t-shirt money. We live off of our live, you wouldn't call them live podcasts because they're not recorded. We just stand around talking Star Trek at people.
Just at people.
And with a cup out, and people give us money. It's great. It's a good way to earn a living.
Star Trek with your cup out.
We will Star Trek for food.
Yeah. So next week, we are going to be heading back to live action and heading back to the Enterprise era.
Enterprise.
Dan was talking a lot about T'Pol a few moments ago.
He's going to be talking about her a whole lot next
week. We'll be discussing the Enterprise episode, Dear Doctor, which is the first season, 13th episode of the first season of Enterprise. So that's what you will be hearing from us about next week. So go watch it. Watch it right now. Turn off this podcast.
Turn it right off.
And watch that episode.
Because
you get to see John Billingsley as Dr. Phlox, with a Phlox-centric episode.
Hooray!
A Phlox capacitor.
All right. So, that all being said, all our regular show closing duties having been conducted and now concluded, we can move along to the final stage.
Move along home.
Which is to quickly and without wasting our listeners' time...
Say something clever.
Well, I was going to say more like you say goodbye and like we'll talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
So that's what I'll say. I'll say goodbye and then we'll talk to you.
Bad bye.
Next week.
Okay.
We'll see you next week.
fascinating. Mechanical manifestations, of course. Was anyone considering the subject of pterodactyls?
Spock, not now.